Welcome to Reaction. I'm Maggie Pagano, Executive Editor, and I'm delighted to have in the hot chair today, and it really is a hot one, Robert Halfen, who is Conservative MP and Chairman of the Education Select Committee. Now, Robert, you brought out this wonderful report which is trying to look at the very fundamental problem we have here with working class children and their educational attainment, and yet all the headlines are, you've stoked a culture war. You've been trolled and accused of being racist, which is deeply sad, so I guess these people haven't read the report. But what is your reaction to their reaction, if you like? It must be quite disappointing.
First of all, there's some serious reaction, which I want to deal with and explain to people why this term white privilege is so divisive. But of course you get the kind of trolls and people calling my office and calling myself and my staff racist. I'm more worried about the effect on my hardworking staff, but such is life. You don't, you don't make an omelette without breaking eggs, as the old saying goes. And my issue about this whole thing is that white working class boys and girls, their lack of attainment in education from those ones from disadvantaged backgrounds has been a taboo subject for far too long. And people have wanted to sweep this under the carpet. There's been muddled and lazy thinking about it. So the stock response from government has always been, it's about poverty. Well, if it's about poverty, why is it that virtually every other ethnic group who are on free school meals, who are often in greater poverty than even white working class disadvantaged peoples, do better? Yeah. And so the reaction of the government is either it's poverty or just more of the same policies. And that's what this report is about. And I just urge the serious people who may have concerns to read it properly from cover to cover. The white privilege section is literally a couple of pages, two or three pages in a 90-page report, where we have recommendations from everything from introducing family hubs to a more vocational education system to parental engagement with schools and using the university access fund, the 800 million that goes to universities, to try and get people from disadvantaged backgrounds in a much better way.
Robert, do you think, though, in retrospect, two questions here, was it perhaps a mistake, considering the fragility of this expression, to use that the terminology of white privilege, one? And secondly, as you say, the gap between the white working class and ethnic group is very stark. And I've seen your figures that 17.7% of white ethnic achieved grade 5 at GCSE in maths and English, and 22.5% of all ethnic groups. That's actually quite a big, quite a chunky difference. So how do you think, sorry, a bit long-winded here, but how do you think that this white privilege is affecting the way people teach, how the children think about themselves?
Explain. Well, the first thing is, the other awful statistic is just 16% of white working class pupils from disadvantaged backgrounds go to university. And that is the worst from any other ethnic group except Roma and Gypsy ethnic groups. But in terms of the white privilege, I'm fed up with being in a situation where you can't discuss things or debate them because they're too controversial, because people want to close down debate, because that's actually what some people are trying to do. And the reason why I feel that the white privilege terminology is so potentially the absolutely wrong-headed thing to do is for three reasons. It's wrong-headed because it, in essence, implies collective guilt when individuals should be responsible for racist actions. It's wrong-headed because it's saying to poorer white communities who suffer from enormous disadvantage that they have white privilege, and many of them have been disengaged from the education system. And it's wrong-headed because it's factually incorrect, because we know that at every single stage of the education system, disadvantaged white working class boys and girls underperform compared to most other ethnic groups and educational cohorts. And the problem with this terminology is that it is spreading. Barnardo's have used it in their blog as a guide for parents. Only last week, the National Association of Teachers for Religious Education have said that students as young as eight should be introduced to the term white privilege and taught about it. Various councils up and down the land are now using this terminology, and it's divisive. It pits one group against another. It's insulting to disadvantaged white people, and it is not helpful, because if you are a family, and one of the reasons we found for why it is that white working class boys and girls from preschool meals do less well and struggle in this way in education, it's because often the families have been disengaged from generation to generation, because they may have had a very bad experience in terms of education, just pass that on to the next generation, to the next generation, to the next generation. And if they already disengaged and cynical about schooling and education, and then you tell them they are white privileged, or they hear, because you can have an intellectual debate, and the BBC have got a basketball player going on about white privilege on their website at the moment. You can have that intellectual debate, but you think of Ron Seal, does what it says on the tin. All people hear are two words, white privileged. And that causes immense damage.
Yeah. I mean, you're talking about Bernardo's and councils and so forth, but do you think that that is percolating down into the classroom with the 12 and 13 and 14 year olds? Do you think, I mean, does that affect the way the teachers teach them?
Well, I think
the way that they engage in class?
I think it's being used more and more, but what we're saying is that we want to stop it spreading, and because it's unhelpful. Right. And when you have organisations like Bernardo's, or the irony of Bernardo's is that the chief executive of Bernardo's came to our committee and said he does not like the term.
Wow.
He does not like the term, yet his own organisation puts it on a blog. So this is the thing. It's not but it isn't the only part of the report. As I say, it's about two or three pages, and there is substantial things in that report that we both try to identify the reasons for white working class disadvantage, but also offer some solutions to government.
Could you tell us some of those recommendations? Because some of them are really very interesting.
Yes, because we've talked about multi-generational disadvantage. And what has happened is that often when the government come up with big education programs, money is thrown, or a lot of money is given to big projects like the London Challenge, for example. Big cities. It's helped London schools. We now have some of the best schools in the country in London. But what has happened in that process is that the towns have been forgotten about and left behind. Who lives in those towns? White working class, predominantly white working class pupils and families. And what needs to happen is, rather than have a one size fits all to this funding regime, the government need to look at reform of the pupil premium, literally target or tailor make funding at the local level, identify where the pockets of problems are, and direct funding to those neighbourhoods at neighbourhood level. And by the way, this isn't just us saying that. The recent Commission on Race Disparities, Tony Sewell, has argued for this as well. The second thing needs to happen is that often this comes about in early years. Just to give you a general figure, I'm not just referring to white working class at the moment, but we know there is a problem of attainment. So at the age of 16, disadvantaged pupils are 18 months behind their better off peers by the time they get to GCSE. 40% of that attainment gap is caused in early years. We know that white working class pupils from disadvantaged backgrounds at the key stages at 4 and 5, when they were meant to be assessed, only 50% of them reach the measurements that they're supposed to be in, much lower than most other ethnic groups. So we need early intervention. And we've proposed a host of measures, from family hubs across towns in the country to parental engagement programs that some schools are doing already, to a long-term funding settlement for maintained nurseries, which are actually a success story for the state. They're all either good or outstanding, but often live from hand to mouth. And there are other things in there in terms of early intervention, but those are the key things. The third thing is that, which has always frustrated me, is that the culture for white working class, white working class pupils or families, is vocational and skills. Yeah. And that has always been sort of sniffed at, in this kind of massive drive to go to university, 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 as Tony Blair once said, what we should be doing is boosting the prestige of vocational education and skills. In some ways, the government are doing that, but reintroducing design and technology into the EBAC. It's not part of the EBAC at the moment, which beyond me, I cannot understand. And on top of that, we should have Rocket Boost, something we have discussed before, Rocket Boost degree apprenticeships.
Yeah.
We put in the report that no school should get a satisfactory rating or above unless they are properly teaching apprenticeships and skills as a career option. Because there is a clause or a law called the Baker Clause, named after Lord Baker, whose idea it was. Funny enough, I introduced it as a Minister for Skills in Parliament, but it's not being implemented properly. And why? And when we raised this with Ofsted, they seem to care about this clause very little. In fact, last week, the Chief Inspector of Ofsted said to me, what would you like us not to do if we start implementing that clause? And I said, it's the law of the land. So what needs to happen is, I mean, it needs to be much tougher because schools need to encourage schools, skills and apprenticeships as much as they do university. And we're not against university either. And in fact, what we want to do is have a target for the Office of Students about how the number of white working class boys and girls from disadvantaged backgrounds, how many are going to university. £800 million access fund that's not doing very much to help people from disadvantaged people backgrounds to get to higher education. That should be spent upstream, people in schools working with pupils, but it also should be perhaps spent on degree apprenticeships where disadvantaged pupils will not fear getting a loan. They learn while they learn, they have no debt, they get a skill and a good job at the end. So there are other solutions in there, including introducing teacher degree apprenticeship in disadvantaged areas. We have nursing degree apprenticeships, we have policing degree apprenticeships, but for some reason we're not allowed to have undergraduate teaching degree apprenticeships and teacher training colleges in disadvantaged areas as well. And a lot of these policies won't just benefit disadvantaged white communities, they'll benefit disadvantaged pupils across the board.
Across, yeah. I mean, Robert, we, you and I have been talking about this for at least 10 years and we agree, we're on the same page. But so did the Cameron government, so did May. You know, it is quite an old debate. What will it take for it to get through? Is it the parents going, oh, but I would love Johnny not to go to university and take the degree? So is there a sort of a social, cultural thing? Is it that the schools are not giving the wide range of options to their pupils? Or does it just take a long time for this sort of, you know, 50
Well, it shouldn't take a long time. One, because every teacher at the moment has to be a graduate, so every teacher has gone to university, it makes it much harder for, I think, for there to be a cultural understanding of the importance of apprenticeships and skills. That's one of the reasons why I want teaching degree apprenticeships to be introduced. But there just has to be a rocket from above, from Boris, from the Prime Minister, to say this is what he wants, because everything emanates from the number 10.
From the top.
And Ofsted has to be much tougher and care about vocational education and skills as much as they do about academic learning.
Yeah.
And my feeling is that it's always a secondary vocational and academics. Vocational skills and apprenticeships is a much more of a secondary thing to Ofsted rather than academic learning.
And de facto, and the school therefore then puts it on its literature and prospectus. You know, we get X into
But also, the whole system is designed for universities, so students have a UCAS for universities. And what I'd like to see, and I've argued for a long time, is UCAS for FE and skills. Mm-hmm. So at the same time, so you don't just have a university thing. At the same time, people could apply to apprenticeships for FE. Whatever it may be, but so it's given that proper parity of esteem. To be fair to the government, though, they're introducing the T levels, which is an important step forward. They've got the lifetime skills guarantee, and they're boosting funding for FE. So not all is bleak, and actually, skills were the centerpiece of the Queen's speech, which I thought was incredible. Yes, when has ever a skills been a centerpiece of a Queen's speech? And I think the Prime Minister gets it, but I just think we need to do a lot more.
Can I ask one final question? One of the figures you've given is that 47% of white working class did not attain the early years. Yeah, now that is an extraordinary number. Now it seems to me that if most children are starting nursery at 3-4, going on to main school from 5, so you've got from 5 to, let's say, 16, that's 5, 6, 11, 12 years in a school environment, I mean, we could work out how many hours that is. How is it that that number can be leaving at 16, some of them functionally illiterate? Are they just bored? Are the teachers not actually, do they perhaps only want to look after the brighter ones? But that just seems, I mean, what are they doing all this time?
Well, I don't know the answer to that, but what we've tried to do is identify that it's going on and some of the causes. I mean, I know we've set out some of the causes. I don't have a specific answer why it goes on year after year through the education system. But the solutions that we put in there, they may not be perfect, but they're definitely things that which we've just talked about, is the things that I think that could reverse that. But we can't just have more of the same.
No, absolutely not.
Because we have this relentless academic focus. I've had a debate with Nick Gibb, who I love. I mean, I really respect him. I know he believes in standards, passion, has done amazing things with schools. He wrote an article recently saying that education should not be about preparing people for work. It should be, and I asked him about this, and he said that because I said to him, if you learn about the names of fish, how can that get you a job? It's important, yes. The names of fish in a river is important. But he said, well, you get cognitive dissonance, and that will help you have the intellectual ability to get a job. And I said, well, my view is that you not only teach people the names of fish in a river, but you also teach them how to fish. And that's the kind of curriculum I want. I want academic knowledge and skills. And this is the problem. It's such a polarized debate. You're either one or the other. I happen to actually believe in both. But and I think education should be about preparing people for the world of work.
Absolutely. But in a sense, it's a rather ludicrous debate, because you can't go on to do the vocational skills unless you have basic reading and writing and maths. I mean, there's sort of that's giving people the tools to live.
Absolutely. And no one, where Nick Gibb has been brilliant is the literacy standards and math. I'm completely with him on that, and phonics and absolutely the knowledge side of it, learning to read and write, very much so. But we also need to have more skills-based curriculum as well.
Yeah. Last, I know that I said that was the last. What do you think has happened in Britain socially and culturally from maybe the 50s onwards? In the 50s and 60s, but 70s, social mobility, people, families, you rose or you gained in society by having a good education, and you were hopefully going to do something better than your parents, not better in that sense, but something that was inspiring. And it sounds to me, from what you're saying, you say in the report, there's been this parental disengagement. Why do you think that's happened, that shift? Because there's no question there's been...
Well, I think we often repeat the mistakes that we did under Mrs. Thatcher. And believe me, I was a massive Mrs. Thatcher fan. I loved her. I came into politics partly because of her. So we believed at the time, and I was one of those people in the trickle-down effect, that if you improve the economy, everything else will trickle down. And what I came to understand is that actually you have to build social capital as well. You have to strengthen communities and families, because otherwise you have a broken society, even if you do have a free market. And the same thing, I think sometimes government does exactly their same mistake in education. So they think if we improve academic capital, i.e. we have a relentless focus on standards and knowledge, then everything else will trickle down and everything else will be right. Well, I think that is wrong. I think we need to have academic capital, but skills capital hand in hand. And because what is happening is the attainment gap is stalling, if not at best, and getting worse at worst. The approach of just more of the same is just not working. We also have to prepare our education system for the fourth industrial revolution, automation. We're going to need to completely reskill our workforce in almost every field, every profession, from manual labour to white collar, so-called white collar work. And I think we need to look at our curriculum, make sure we maintain standards and knowledge, but actually expand it so we build academic and skills capital hand in hand.
Absolutely. So you don't regret using the white privilege term, and you quite like the debate, just to round up.
I don't like the debate, but I think it's we must have the debate and stop sweeping things under the carpet, stop denying just because they're white. We seem to want to ignore the fact that 900,000 white working class pupils from disadvantaged backgrounds struggle at every stage of the education system compared to every other virtually every other ethnic cohort and every other group. So that is shameful.
Yeah, it is shameful. It's tragedy. Well, hopefully this is the start of reversing it, Robert.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for your time. Thank you.
Take care. Nice to speak to you. God bless.
Bye-bye.